Hello, everyone, and welcome to Linux Crazy Podcast. This is podcast number 83, and I've been doing pretty good. The weather down here has started to cool off just a little bit. It was about 74 degrees the other morning, so I decided to start riding my bicycle back and forth to work. I'm trying to get rid of a belly that I've accumulated after I've quit smoking. An ideal weight for me is probably about 175, being I'm only about 5'9", but I've never been like a really skinny kid anyhow. But in high school, and I was a little chubby, but about 170, 175 is a pretty good weight for me. When I was smoking, now I've quit smoking now for probably over a year, but when I was smoking, my weight would stay around 185. So I was a little chubby, but it wasn't too awful bad. I didn't really feel like I was really a fat guy. But since I quit smoking and my appetite's jumped up, now I hit 195 and I started getting a little uncomfortable. One reason being is that I'm cheap and I didn't want to have to buy a bunch of new clothes. My pants were getting awful tight, and I was afraid I was going to have to buy a new wardrobe, so I had to take some drastic measures. And one of the best things I found is that riding my bike, it's good for me too, because it's good for my knees and everything. It's nice and peaceful in the morning. The reason I stopped riding it was in the summer. I didn't mind riding it in the morning, but after I work outside anyhow most of the day, if I'm not have to do stuff inside the office, but it's just, you just get all hot and sweaty and then having at the end of the day being tired and having to ride the bike for a 20-minute bike ride home, it was just a little too much for me. I was a little too lazy, and I don't know, I just figured, well, what the heck? I mean, I had no reason to kill myself, but there's no reason now since that the temperatures have dropped. So I don't really have a good excuse to put off riding the bicycle. So I started riding the bike again. Another thing I started doing was I eliminated all milk. I sneak a little bit of milk every once in a while. I love milk and cereal, but I eliminated all milk, pretty much all bread. I eat a little bit of meat, but not really hardly any red meat. I might eat some chicken or turkey, but I'm kind of holding my own. I've lost maybe 5 pounds, but that's about it. But it's not easy, you know. So as long as I'm not going the other way, I think I'm doing okay. All right, now back to Linux. Let's see. What have I been up to with Linux? I just installed Ubuntu on a buddy's computer. He had an old Dell desktop computer. It had a P4. And he had upgraded the RAM. He had like a gig and a half of RAM, so it was had regular Intel graphics, nothing fancy, but it was a good candidate for Linux. He had Windows XP on it, and he's had to reinstall a few times between viruses getting him and spyware getting him, and Windows just acting up. He's been frustrated before, and I've been kind of telling him, say, hey, why don't we install Linux on it? Well, the last time he had me reinstall Windows on it, because he had a hard time finding the drivers for the graphics and sound and some other stuff. So he backed up everything that he wanted to back up, all his pictures and a bunch of stuff like that. And then he had me do a clean install, and I did a clean install Windows. And I told him, I said, you know, that stuff you backed up, make sure that doesn't have any of the viruses or the spyware and stuff on it. And he said, oh, yeah, I'll run it through Norton. Like Norton's like a cure-all, right? It's the worst. So he puts everything back on the computer. I installed Windows on it. I got all the drivers installed. It was working fine here. I mean, for Windows, you know, I'm pretty biased. But then he had it for about a month or maybe even 3 weeks, 2 weeks, and it was had all the viruses back on it again. He says, I hate this Firefox web browser. I said, why? He says, it keeps redirecting me to all these other sites for trying to get me to buy stuff. I said, that's not Firefox. I said, you got that viruses and spyware and Trojans and all the other crap you got on there. So this time, finally, he was frustrated. He says, I got to redo something here. And I said, well, I'll tell you what, I'm not going to put Windows back on it again. I'll put Linux on it. So Ubuntu 10.10 is just about ready to get released. So they got a release candidate out. So I just went ahead and put a regular old x86 Ubuntu on there. And he's had it now for a couple days. Got his email working. He got his printer working. Sound works. Flash works. I mean, everything he needs. YouTube. Everything works that he needs. Open Office on there for any of his resume and all that kind of stuff. So he's doing fine. He's had it for a few days. I told him to stop by IRC Freenode at hash Linux Crazy. I set up XChat on there, so all he had to do is click the icon, and it takes him right there. And I said, ask me any questions. I said, don't call me on the phone. I don't want to be getting 18 million telephone calls. Just, I'm on IRC anyhow. Just stop by there. If you have a question, just go ahead and ask me. I might not get to it right then, but I'll get to it shortly. So I think that's my new support channel, Linux Crazy. So anyhow, he's a good guy. He's been a friend of mine for a while, so I'm hoping to get him hooked on Linux. The other stuff that I've been doing is I have been my x86 Arch testing, and I've kind of expanded it a little bit. I was Thomas Kahle, K-A-H-L-E. I think you pronounce it Kahle. I don't think it's Kahle. I think it's Kahle. Thomas Kahle, and I believe he's from Sweden. He's you know, one of these pretty sharp fellows. He's in his mid-20s. He's just about to become a Gentoo developer. I think he's passed all of his quizzes. I'm not exactly positive, but he won't have any trouble. He's a pretty sharp guy. He put together this Python program called TATT. And I'll have all the links on at linuxcrazy.com for this podcast, all the different links that I talk about. I'm not going to go through each one like HTTP:// I'm not going to do all that. It's too hard. I can't remember it all, and I'll mess up. And you're not going to listen to it anyhow. If you really want the links, you can stop by linuxcrazy.com and check it out. So he's come up with this this Python script that automates a lot of the tasks that you need to do as a Arch tester. And the reason that Arch testing is so important is to keep the Gentoo portage tree as up-to-date as possible. You know, you hear complaints from people, the stable is so old. Well, that's because there's people not contributing and testing these packages and making sure that they're stable. You don't want to stabilize something if it's not ready, but so you need people testing. So that's where just about any user can get involved, is testing these packages. Now, this isn't just for Gentoo. I'm sure Debian has it, and Ubuntu, and SUSE, and Fedora, and all of them. You could test packages and get it ready for stabilization. I only know about how Gentoo does it. Gentoo does everything by Bugzilla. The developer, whoever's the maintainer, or it can be a user or someone that needs the package stabilized, can request a stabilization request. And once the stabilization request is done, then people like me that are Arch testers come in and try to test the package as many ways possible and make sure that it's ready to be stabilized, can be put on the stable tree. So it takes time. So these tools that Thomas has come up with, and his nick is Tom111, really makes the job a lot more enjoyable, a lot faster, and just the smart way to do things. There's another package that's GATT that's been around for a while. It's more for the actual developer editing of the Bugzilla, the package. He's actually working with the package and working with the portage tree as far as doing the actual stabilization, not the actual testing of it, but the actual changing the package from unstable to stable. So this particular tool, TATT, is more for people like me that are Arch testing. And I'm not so sure that I would, if I was a full-fledged developer and I was going ahead and editing the e-builds and making them stable, if I would trust some program to do it anyhow. I think I would just soon do it physically myself, to go ahead and run RepoMan on it and everything else that has to be done to make sure when I commit it that I haven't made any mistakes. This Arch testing is, it's not, I mean, you can make a mistake and it's not the end of the world, but you wouldn't want to make a mistake on the actual real Portage tree if you can avoid it. So his little program, this TATT, it does a lot of the checks for you. It emerges the package with a bunch of different use flags. It goes ahead and sets it up in package keywords so it can be unmasked, so you're able to emerge it on a stable install. It works really good. Also, when you get done, you can, once it passes all the tests, it has a check that you could go ahead and edit the bug. You don't have to go on the website and edit it. You can just go ahead and edit the bug right there from the program. I kind of do a couple other tests that I'm going to talk to Tom about it, and he might already have it in there, but that I'm not aware of it. But there's a couple other tests, checks that I like to run personally. The first one I like to run is I go ahead and run the RepoMan on that directory the package is in. And the RepoMan is actually a tool for Portage developers, and it's actually, you use that before you actually commit anything. And it will tell you if there's some errors in the e-build, or if the manifests haven't been updated. So I like to go ahead and check for any open bugs. So I'll run PyBugs. Is a program that's a Python program that actually logs into Bugzilla, and it'll do a search for any open bugs on a particular package. There's a lot of other options for PyBugs. It's a pretty neat program, and you can run it from the command line, or you do run it from the command line, so you can do all your work right from the command line. Running RepoMan, going ahead and check for open bugs, go ahead and run TATT, TAT, go ahead and emerge the program with a whole bunch of different use flags, go ahead and check the reverse dependencies, then you can actually go ahead and test out the program yourself. I run GNOME, so what I'll concentrate on is most of the programs that are GNOME related that I can go actually run myself. I'll do games, I can run games, I can, and then any of the core programs or any of the, you know, regular stuff. The ones I stay away from is basically KDE programs that run on KDE, because I really don't have a way of actual running them. And I think it's best if, you know, once you emerge it and it passes everything, and then going ahead and actually physically, you know, just checking it out, make sure it works okay. The other thing is you'll notice in I'm going to, like I said, on LinuxCrazy.com, I'll put a couple little scripts that I came up with. The one that actually runs the RepoMan, the one that checks for the open bugs, and my little update script. You want to give yourself a pretty basic, stable install with no unstable packages installed. So before I even start any testing, I go ahead and update the system. And what that does is that gives me a clean slate, removes all the package keywords, goes ahead and updates everything, goes ahead and run RevDev rebuild, and to make sure that I've got a perfectly stable system to when I start testing these other packages for stabilization. Like I said, in those two little scripts that I came up with, it's pretty interesting. I ran across this looking at another script. There's actually a function. It's called etc. INITD, init.d, functions .sh, and it has all of the e-build little functions in it. And it's pretty neat. You could add color to your little scripts. You could start them and stop them, and just a bunch of different stuff. So I'll that too will be there at LinuxCrazy.com in the links for this podcast. Another program I've been using for a while that's really comes in handy, and it especially comes in handy on this little web server /asterisk server that I have here at the house. It's a little program called LogTailer. It's written in C. And what it does is it tails more than one log. So it's just like you do tail -F, whatever log you want to tail. This one does it, but you could tail multiple logs. So I can tail access log, I can tail error log, I can tail system log, I can tail the asterisk log. So it's really neat. And while I'm running LogTailer, can see where asterisks, it's a big problem with asterisks as far as people trying to log in, and they have these massive scripts that just will run through. They'll run through every name in the alphabet. They'll run through every number. They'll run through, and then if they get a hit, then they start trying passwords over and over and over and over and over and over. So what I did was I come up with a little script that it's basically like fail to ban, but it's actually seems to work pretty good for me. Is I'll keep an eye on this the LogTailer, and every once in a while I'll see where somebody's trying to log in. And I'll just ban that IP address, just a straight ban with IP tables. And it works out really well. So instead of having some fancy program fail to ban running and all that stuff, I check the log, every so often, like just about once a day or something. It only takes a second to check the log. You just look and see. And you can see, it's easy to see when they've been trying to log in. So it's got their IP address on there. So I just drop that IP address. The other thing that I was been fooling around with, well, I've been having running for a while. It's been a big hit with a lot of my buddies, is that I go to this website and read this little, it's like a motivational saying that's on the website every day. And instead of taking the time to go to the website every day, and now you could do this with any website, is instead of taking the time to go to the website every day, I just go ahead and pull the little section off of the website that has the information that I want. And I store it in a temporary file, and then I use that temporary file to email. At the beginning, I was just emailing me with the little stuff that I pulled off the website. And I call it a bash mailer. I sent it to another person. Now I'm sending it to about 40 different people. So it's been real popular. And so I'll put that little the bash mailer on the on LinuxCrazy.com. So maybe you have a website that you visit every day, or maybe you're in a club, or maybe you're in school or something, and you want to email your friends a little something every day from a website, and you can do it. You have to be able to set up your mail server to be able to go through your ISP. That's what I do. I have BellSouth.net, and I run it through their ISP, their mail server, to send the mail. I use PostFix here. I just set it up to run through out through their mail server. Otherwise it'll be blocked. So, but that works out real well. Or you can use Gmail. You can send mail through Gmail. But what the script does is it enables you to put an attachment on there and send it to more than just one person. If I was doing this, with a regular mail client, I guess I could, I could CC all these different people and then, go do it physically, just pull the information off the website, CC a whole bunch of people and email them. But this seems to be a lot more proficient. It goes out on a cron job every night at 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm not spamming anybody. These people actually requested me to give them this information. So I think everything's okay. I would hate to be accused of spammer, but I'm not sending it to anybody. I'm sending it to people that actually requested it. So yeah, I wanted to get out a podcast because it's been a while since I did a podcast, and it's really easy to procrastinate. So I'm glad I got this out, and I hope you enjoy it, and I'll talk to y'all next podcast. See you later. Bye bye.